Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest is award-winning author, poet, and musician, Adam Stemple. Tonight, we're talking about the last two books in his series, How to Write Fantasy Novels, Volume 4, Getting Published, and Volume 5, Self-Publishing. Adam, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Hello, Mark. Glad to be up early and talking to you as well.
Now, when I read these two books, I thought that they would be of real use and real interest to anybody, not just fantasy writers, but any writer hoping to get published. Can you remind the audience of the other three titles?
The other three titles, the first ones were Getting Started, The First Draft, and Revising.
And all that's really good for writing skills. These last two books really have to do with the practicality of getting published. And it's a whole, they have a whole different tone to them.
I say in the intro to these books that as opposed to the first three books where there's really no wrong way to write,
yeah.
In these books there are some actual definite hoops you have to jump through.
Yeah, and one of the first things is, and I love this, you put this in the introduction to both books, is you have to ask yourself why you want to get published anyways. And there's three reasons. I want you to just address each one as I mention it. Validation. Mm-hmm. Is that true for a lot of people? They just want to be validated as a writer?
Well, that's the dream. When you dream as a kid of being a writer, you're not thinking about the money. Especially if you know any writers, you're not thinking about the money. But really, a lot of people do get into writing because you want to see your book in a library. You want to see it in a bookstore. You want people to you want to see your name on a book that a publisher has put out. I mean, it can be a lot about doing something that other people see as valuable.
Now, this next one makes me shiver. Income. I can't believe this is a business that you want to depend on as your main source of income.
It can be very difficult, but I've been a freelancer in a variety of ways my entire life, as a musician, as a writer,
right.
as a card player, as a poker coach, you know. So there's a lot of different ways to make money. It is honestly a much better side hustle than it is a main gig.
Okay.
But the same could be said about most creative pursuits. They're just difficult to make money in. But there are successful writers and their paths to success in independent and self-publishing that are actually more viable than traditional publishing.
The amazing thing to me, and we're still under income, is in both books you write about how much you have to write per year. I think a lot of people think, well, I'll just whip off this one book and I'll be set for the rest of my life. You got to really put in a lot of time writing.
You really do. I always say that I point to, you know, various really successful writers, whether self or traditionally published, and say, look, that's a lottery ticket, not a business plan. to try and make a steady income, you're better off aiming for middle income, which involves a lot of writing. The easiest way, or rather the simplest way, none of it is easy, but the simplest way to make money is, frankly, self-publishing
right.
a lot of books constantly. And that's, you know, putting out a book every month.
I know. That's a lot of writing.
It's a lot of writing. I call it fire hosing out some books, you know, and not everybody's capable of it. I'm not capable of it, but I know enough people who are capable of it and do it that it is quite a viable way to make a decent living. And while you're doing that, you're still throwing darts at the dartboard of cultural zeitgeist.
Well, as you write about in the book, you do a couple of things. You self-publish, but then you also get published, like, say, short stories and a few of your novels. But you sort of mix it up between both publishing and self-publishing. And that sort of seems to be a sweet spot for you.
It really is, because I am one of those people who needs the validation.
Okay. Well, I think that's legit, but you need to admit it to yourself.
Yeah, yeah, you do. And so that the selling short stories scratches that itch without, you know, spending a full year at 180,000 words or so writing a novel and then, you know, feverishly pitching that around to no avail. You know, the novel market is really tough.
I have to believe that.
And, yeah. And the short story market, though it doesn't pay very well and often very little, there's a lot of markets for it. And I'm a poet as well, so I've currently got, like, I think 20 things out on submission right now between poems and short stories. I got about 6 short stories and 14, 15 poems out working for me, sitting on editors' desks. And I try and keep that amount out there, always turning those around. And then I self-publish my novels.
Now, I'm going to mention for the benefit of the audience is that you really should pick up these 2 small books because there's a lot of information we're not going to talk about. For instance, in self-publishing, you really walk people through the Amazon setup. And that, yeah. Although I'm really glad you did that in that book, it's not something it's going to make entertaining radio. So.
It is not entertaining. But it's also not as difficult and daunting.
No,
as it
but you need it. You really need it in front of you in order to do it. But let's talk about different kinds of publishing. What's traditional publishing?
Traditional publishing is going through a publisher, having an editor, a copy editor, selling your book to a publisher and having an editor pick it up, signing a contract, and having them worry about all the editing and copy editing and cover copy and advertising, of which they will do very little for you.
By the way, I can tell you that's true from this end of the stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. So traditional publishing, and that covers the big four, which are the big four publishing companies and all the smaller companies underneath there, and in some ways some of the independent publishing, depending on how big they are.
Well, what's the difference between a small press and independent publisher?
A small press, and it's a gray area. It almost depends on how they define themselves. In general, a small press will actually do a print run. And independent publishers generally don't have enough staff for that. They're smaller, sometimes 1 or 2 person deals, and they'll do print on demand. Independent and they'll take far less of a percentage. Independent publishing are the ones who generally take 15, 20, 25% to put out your book, and they'll handle the cover and get you up on a website. They're almost like self-publishing, but just a little less work for you. If you don't like to pay for copy editing and cover, they're usually a good way to go. Whereas a small press or an indie publisher generally, the small press functions more like a traditional publishing company, but just has a very smaller number of books that come out a month.
An academic press, is that a independent press or a small press? And I say that because I work with a lot of academic presses, mostly for nonfiction. But when I get their catalogs, I notice that they have fiction on their lists. So they do publish fiction. Some academic presses don't, but a lot of them are now publishing fiction too. So is an academic press technically an independent publisher or a small, would you call it a small press?
I'd call it a small press, kind of a small boutique press. They're the academic version of publishers that just put out coffee table books.
Got it.
Or just put out cookbooks.
Yeah. And that's one of the things you write about in the book is that you got to find out when you're writing, who is going to be the publisher that's going to serve you best for that genre? Like, Like, you don't want to go to a cookbook press for for a fantasy book. Unless you do a fantasy cookbook, but, you know.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Isn't that a good, I think that, I should write the pitch for that.
Write the pitch.
And that brings up the next thing. You really go into, really know how to write a pitch. And what is a pitch?
The pitch is it's your ad copy for a publisher. It's different from, you're writing different ad you're writing different ad copy as someone trying to become traditionally published than someone who's self-publishing. If you're self-published, you're writing an ad directly to the reader. If you're traditionally publishing, you're writing ad to the editor. So you're trying to convince them, you're trying to tell them not only what the book is about, but convince them that that it's saleable and that it works for their publishing company.
Now, again, if you're self-publishing or you're doing this without an agent, you're just going to do this cold. I think that's going to be tough. Is getting an agent a really important thing, even if this is your first time?
It's important if you're submitting to the big companies. What you want to do is there are always publishing companies that accept unsolicited manuscripts. That means a manuscript that is not asked for and is unagented. They'll say unagented or unsolicited submissions.
But who's going to read those submissions?
Slush readers.
I wanted to hear you say it.
Yes. That is, so the reason you want to learn to write well, the cynical reason is because you want to get out of the slush pile.
Got it.
So every publisher out there has a giant stack of books, a stack of manuscripts that come in every day. And they hire very underpaid people who love books to read them.
Are these interns?
And interns, generally. interns, volunteers, people who want to break into publishing. And they read them. And if they like something, they'll pass it on. But that they get jaded very quickly.
I have to imagine.
They're reading a lot of unagented and manuscripts. And so if you can write even decently, that gets you to the top 10% of the slush pile.
And that's a big deal.
It really is. Because if you can get there, then you can get I say I'm so arrogant now. Every once in a while, you get a letter back on your short story submissions that says, hey, we just wanted to let you know you've made it to the second round of submissions, so it's going to take a little while longer. And I'm so arrogant, I get really disappointed when it gets rejected after that, because I always assume if I get there, then it's a done deal. It is not a done deal, but it is nice.
Well, you also, you know, there were so many things in these two books that surprised me. You also said that the turnaround can be sometimes many months.
I just got a rejection from a story that had been with this one magazine for a year.
Wow.
And my reaction was, oh, my friends, I moved on from you 6 months ago. Don't worry.
Well, you write that even 18 months can be a turnaround time. So what you've got to do is don't sit and wait for the results on this one submission. Yeah. Get it. Yeah. Do other stuff.
Especially if you're looking for agents, and I do a long thing about how to pitch agents and what to send them. Yeah, agents take the longest. So you want to pitch a bunch of agents at one time. I mean, I had already found an agent and signed with them, and I think like 6-8 months later, I got a request from one of the other agents for the complete manuscript to look at.
Wow!
And once again, I was like, yeah, thank you for your interest. I've already signed.
Is it worthwhile to get an agent, and how easy it is to find an agent?
It is very difficult to get an agent, and it is worth it. They do a lot for you. They open doors to places that are closed to to people without an agent, because they're the big four publishers just will not look at unagented manuscripts. Agents are the gatekeepers for the gatekeepers.
Oh.
So there's some places that you just cannot get people to look at it without an agent. So agents are difficult to get. However, I do outline in these books, too, that I personally think that a small press is better for a new author than a big press for a debut book. Because once again, it's the lottery ticket aspect. If your first book is with a big publisher, most likely 99% of the time, you're going to get very little help from them. So you're going to go out there. You're not going to know about publishing. You're not going to know about how to publicize the book. And it's going to be very tough for your first book to do well. And if your first book does poorly, now you have a track record.
Oh yeah,
and that can be a death knell. But with a small press, they've only got 10 or 12 titles for that year. I've gotten more help from my small press books than on any of the books that I've done for big presses.
And
it's just because they allocate a much bigger portion of their ad budget, which is much smaller, but you get a bigger percentage of it.
Yeah, these large presses, I mean, even dealing with them as a person who's trying to interview one of the authors is a piece of work. I mean, it's amazing what you have to go through. And small presses, I love dealing with small presses.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And anytime, you know, and I've experienced this as someone who's ran one and two person businesses and then sold those businesses to a big company and worked for them for a little bit. And just the things that you can do as a small business owner and operator, the turnaround time. We used to do stuff in this one two-person business I had. We would come up with an idea, we'd code it out, we'd implement it in a week. We got bought by a company, and we told them we'd do this same thing for them. They said, oh, no, we'll have our IT department handle it. And 18 months later, they rolled out the same thing that we had gotten done in a week. And that same principle applies with small press versus big press.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is award-winning author, poet, and musician Adam Stemple. And tonight we're talking about the last two books in his series, How to Write Fantasy Novels, Volume 4, Getting Published, and Volume 5, Self-Publishing. And they're two very different books. I want to talk to you, and something you really try to drill several times into the reader's head is to read the guidelines for the editor or agent and pay attention. You've got to do it. Otherwise, they're just going to chuck it.
Yep. It's a matter of, once again, getting out of the slush pile. If they got 1,000 books in their slush pile, they are looking for a gem. Everyone who goes into publishing dreams of finding that undiscovered author and turning them into Tolkien or whoever is your hero. But on the other hand, they also have to get through 1,000 books.
So they're looking for any excuse to make that number smaller.
Exactly. They'll tell you, I don't care if it's written in crayon. If it's a great book, I'll buy it. But they won't read the one that's written in crayon. So, I mean, pay attention to the guidelines. Follow them. If they're, you know, I will sometimes, if they're too nitpicky, I won't bother with submitting because I think, well, I'm not going to enjoy working with this person. But, you know, the general guidelines are there for a reason. You know, there's the Shun manuscript format, you know, that you learn pretty well. If you get Times New Roman, double spaced, you know, you're good to go. And, but it's, you know, thematically be right, submit your stuff to the right person. It's all in there. Find the guidelines, read them. And again, the idea is to get into that top percent, 10%. Get out of the slush pile to give yourself a fair shot at being published. And one of the ways to do that is to read the guidelines and obey them.
Now, you write about audiobooks, and you really love audiobooks.
I do. I love them, except I don't listen to them at all. And for a very, very specific reason. Audiobooks are great. I've got a very good friend who's he's a brilliant guy. He's a writer, and he's a history professor, and he's very dyslexic. And so he reads almost exclusively through audiobooks.
Got it.
You know, and it's great, and it makes these works accessible to him. For me, it's funny. I was a very early reader, and my mother is a famous children's book writer, and our book was filled with children's books. And my mother read to us every night, which sounds wonderful, except I started reading when I was 2 years old.
Yep.
And I'm a very fast reader. So it just frustrated me because I would read the whole page and then she was, you know, way behind. And so, and I still get that feeling when I listen to someone reading a book. I'm like, come on. You
know. Well, that's the way I read too, because I have to read 2 to 3 books a week. So I'm just zipping right along. I am reading, but I could not stand somebody doing an audio book of it and me listening to it. It's not going to work. But they are popular. People love them.
I'm a big defender of audio books. I'm a supporter of audio books, and I have no audio books. I also want to be someone who listens to podcasts, and I just can never get organized enough to get them onto my phone or anything.
Now I just want. We only have a few minutes left, and I want to talk about self-publishing. What happens in self-publishing, as you write about, is the author is responsible for an awful lot that the publisher would do. And so you've got to know your likely audience, and you've got to know how to get your book sort of recognized and out there so people will read it. Normally that would be taken care of by the publisher, but you've got to do it. And you use an extensive amount of programming in Amazon for this. And you write that 90% of your self-published sales come from Amazon.
Yeah, it's the...
You don't like Amazon as a company, but they're a useful tool.
Yeah, and I'm a big champion of social change, and it's very difficult to accomplish it as a solo writer trying to stay afloat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we have the governmental tools to handle monopolies, and we're just too cowardly to implement them.
Well, be that as it may, the self-publishing book really takes you through all. I never knew all that existed at Amazon, and you really need to go through that.
You get so much data, and if you learn how to use that data, you can really drill down and reach your customers. Now, people who want to buy your book.
I want to bring up one. I have a major complaint about some self-published books.
Shoot.
The cover. I'm a person who really is a visual person. And for some reason, I get an awful lot of self-published books that are just from the cover, it looks like it's a slipshod job. It just looks like they didn't bother. And that reflects on the way I think about the text. Because it's and I've noticed you have examples in the book of your own self-created covers, and it makes a big difference if you're going to try to market this book yourself.
Yeah, the problem is that a lot of writers are people of the word and are not visually oriented. And then they are responsible for doing their own covers. And
it's not that hard to do a decent cover nowadays with everything that's out there visually.
I put in a lot of pointers to places to get affordable covers.
Yep.
You can hire artists. The problem is that, you know, it's different when you got to spend your own money.
Right.
To put stuff out there.
That's right.
As opposed to in traditional publishing, you don't spend any of your own money to get that book out there. And that's a big one on the pro side as opposed to the con side. And so, you know, often when you're self-publishing, you're trying to cut costs because they're actually your costs. And one of those ways is the cover. And it's usually a mistake because that is the point of entry for people, is seeing that cover.
There's a, we only have minute, we only have minutes left, and we could be talking for hours about both books. But there's a phrase you have, or a sentence you have in the book, is that when you're looking for what your, who your audience is, realize that they're looking for a book that's like the best book they just finished, but different enough that it'll be a new experience. So they really just want the same thing that they've read before, but a little bit better or varied.
That is the whole theory of genre publishing and of tropes in fiction, is that you're trying to deliver the same emotion to the reader, but with different details. So you're trying to give them something they recognize, so they get the same emotion, but giving them different characters and plot to hang on to. Now, that can seem like a particularly crass way to go about writing literature, but it all depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
Right,
and how you go about accomplishing it. There is room for creativity in all aspects of writing, no matter what you're trying to accomplish, what tropes you're using, how you know, how closely you're sticking to them,
yeah,
and all of that. So it's you know, I like writing because it's an entirely cerebral pursuit. And you end up in these conversations about, you know, what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to create emotions in another person. That's a fascinating pursuit.
We're completely out of time. And like I said, we could be talking about these books forever. My returning guest tonight is Adam Stemple, award-winning author, poet, and magician. I mean, excuse me, musician. Tonight, we've been talking about the last two books in his series, How to Write Fantasy Novels, Getting Published and Self-Publishing. For anybody that's writing a book, they're worthwhile reading. Adam, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure as always.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.